a doctor in the house.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Doctor.
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 And doctor.
It's time for Advanced Medicine Monday with Dr. Rashid Batar.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
A doctor, not a mechanic.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
The doctor is in.
Now it is time for Advanced Medicine with Dr. Rashid Batar right here each and every week on the Robert Scott Bell Show. This is a big week. Big week. I got to head to Autism One Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, Sunday back to L.A., Pasadena, for the Advanced Medicine Conference with my good buddy, Dr. Batar. I'm just playing it like, if I said it like Ty Bollinger says it, who's presenting with Charlene, it'd be Dr. Butters. That's the nice version of it.
Well, actually, I like your animated voice there, your special voice. I don't know why I'm having such a technical issue right now, Robert, but...
Is it on Facebook for you?
It's actually everywhere, but it's just so funny how things are... It's crazy how many tickets are coming in right now, and we've got a lot of students coming too, so that's really good. We're really excited about that.
Yeah, beautiful. Guys and gals, we've got you linked up in the show notes. The link for those of you watching the Robert Scott Bell Show regularly or just coming in for the first time, if you're not sure how, it's easy. Go there. It'll take you to links. But I know that Ty and Charlene sent it out to the Cancer Truth About Cancer list. Our buddy Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, sent it out to Natural News. So lots of people are going to be flooding to Los Angeles, Pasadena for Memorial Day weekend to be together with us and Dr. Bruce Lipton and a whole host of great presenters. I'm just excited. Can you believe we've been talking about this for months and we're actually up on it? Should we show up? Should we be there?
Yeah, well, I think we're going to have to. You know, I'm sitting here sweating like a pig because the air conditioning just went out somehow. It's just kind of crazy how everything's happening. But I can feel the universe is laughing at us and there's just a lot of good things happening. So right now, I just actually called to talk to Dr. Bruce Lipton just a few minutes ago to make sure. From the schedule standpoint, because it kind of got arranged. You don't even know that the schedule's been rearranged, Robert, so I'll drop that ball after the radio show. But
well, listen, all I need you to remember is that my live broadcast on Sunday is from noon to 2 local time, so just don't have me presenting from noon to 2 on Sunday. Otherwise, I have to do a best of, which can be done, but I just need to know for my Sunday.
Yeah, well,
Saturday, I'm wide open.
We have to talk about that because it's kind of because you're going to be at Autism One, too, right?
On Thursday and Friday, prior to the event.
Good,
I'm flying in Friday night. So
Dell's going to be actually speaking at our event first in the morning because he had to change it because he was speaking Saturday afternoon at our event, but he's going to not speak Saturday morning, so you can go to Autism One in the afternoon.
Oh, right after. Okay.
He's flipping it around.
Saturday, I'm totally flexible. It's just for my live Sunday broadcast, which is, in fact, let me think that through. Again, inside baseball here on the Robert Scott Bell Show, we're talking about the Sunday broadcast on the West Coast. That's California time we're going to be on, is 10 a.m. to noon. So that's the time I can't speak unless, again, if I knew in advance, I could pre-record. But I'm live technically from 10 to noon from the Advanced Medicine Conference broadcasting.
No, you're good because I'll go over the schedule, but that's not the time that we've got you
okay,
scheduled.
Good. Now we've cleared it up before I even knew there was an issue. There's not an issue. All right. So, Dr. Batar, we'll get to more of that as well. A big story, and you sent it to me. We've been covering it. I had Jeffrey Smith on the $2.055 billion award to a couple with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, a form of cancer, after years and years and years of spraying glyphosate-containing Roundup's, Ready's, Monsanto's Roundup, basically. Now it's Bayer's. Is this making tracks everywhere? I'm hoping people are going to go, I'm going to stop spraying my dandelions. Instead, I'm going to eat them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's that when I sent you that article, I don't know whether you'd already seen it. You probably had already seen it, but it was interesting because that was $2 billion in punitive damages. So I think it was $55 million
in whatever the damage, and then the $2 billion on top of it, a billion for each. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it was interesting that it's about time is all I can say, I guess. From a punitive standpoint, that's just about time that, you know, it's high time that they did that. And when we start to look at how many of these agencies have allowed companies like Monsanto to run havoc and the Gestapo-like tactics that they use to go after, you know, people that were organic farmers and such, it's time. I can't feel sorry for them. It's time that they had to basically pay the piper. So I'm happy to see that it's happened.
Dr. Bitar, I like to think of this as God's two for one, right? We see all the evil that Monsanto has been doing, but it's like, you know what? I'm going to wait until Bayer, which goes back to Nazi Germany, folks. You got to understand the lineage, right? I'm going to wait for Bayer to buy Monsanto, and then I'm going to do a two for one. I'm like, God's very efficient that way, and patient, right? Patient. We want, go get them now. We're like, no. We're going to do a two for one here. And Monsanto now purchased by Bayer. Bayer stock tanking. I mean, there are people upset, the shareholders there. Not that I'm upset about that, but bottom line is that that evil entity, a corporation that has been invested in killing, maiming, poisoning, intoxicating, and I'm talking about both of them, now combined together, and boy, I don't think Bayer's got a way out here. They are really in trouble.
Yeah, I think if you start looking at this, Robert, how can they survive? Mm-hmm. If I remember correctly, the actual numbers right now are something like the number of people that are filed, that have cases that have been filed. It's something like 13,000 cases that have been filed, and that they are in various states of litigation. I think that the three that have happened right now, where they've lost three, the first one was the 200 and some million. And then this is, I think, the third one, but this is 2 billion. So if you've got 12, 13,000 more cases in the pipeline, you know, they're not, I mean, they're thinking an average of something like, what was it? I don't remember exactly what they said, but it was something like over $1 trillion in bailout. In
liabilities, potentially.
Yeah, and that's just basing it on a very average nominal per individual cost, which the first three cases has already dwarfed. So based upon those numbers, you know, it's more than trillions of dollars. So,
yeah. Listen, again, this is a disaster for Bayer, but a victory ultimately for the people who want to go about the earth cabin without being poisoned indiscriminately or being convinced that the poison that they're using is perfectly fine and safe. And this is where we're seeing these suits arise that, you know, the people, landscape people, school, you know, all of the people have been using this now coming down with primarily, not exclusively, but this non-Hodgkin's lymphoma that seems to be a common thread here, are now showing enough evidence because of the initial case, the discovery that happened, which can't happen in vaccine court, the unconstitutional kangaroo vaccine courts that the U.S. has set up with no fault, no liability. You can't go in and get discovery about all the lies and deceit and fraud happening behind the scenes. But Monsanto didn't have that protection. I mean, probably somebody would have proposed it, but now Bayer bought them. It's too late. And so each case can build on each case, and it becomes more and more daunting to even try and defend this. Even if they reduce the $2 billion award to something less, they still, as you said, thousands of cases yet to be adjudicated.
Yeah, and so basically from a sustainability standpoint, it's almost like the death toll, or, you know, the what's that, the toll bell rings, or the death toll bell ring, or whatever it is.
Yeah, I can't think about it. I'm a bell and I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. You're a bell. You can't think about it now. But, you know, the whole thing is that it's basically the end of the line for Bayer, or Monsanto especially, but Bayer as we know it. And I don't know how they could change this, how they could survive this. And if they do survive it, they would have to truly, radically, completely from the course, revamp their entire philosophy and their entire thought process. But even then, from a financial standpoint, there's no way that they could handle this type of damage.
No, not again. And it couldn't happen to a nicer corporation, right? From Monsanto to Bayer. So, folks, again, good news. By the way, for a couple of more days now, my friend Jeffrey Smith is airing the Secret Ingredients movie, and I think I may have mentioned that to you, Dr. Bitar, where physicians are following families who have all kinds of diagnoses, from the kids, some two had autism, at least the label, and parents with digestive disorders, grandparents with other issues, and simply prescribed organic non-GMO food for these families and followed them through the course of this movie. And not surprisingly, every one of them improved. In fact, two of those kids lost the label of autism. I'm not saying it's for everybody, that's all you need to do, but man, seriously, simply reducing the inflow of those toxic poisons is significant enough that God has created us very powerfully to be a self-corrective mechanism that our bodies in many cases can overcome it if it's not too terribly destroyed, right? And that's where the things you do, Dr. Batar, you've come in to help kids that are well beyond just eating clean, which they need to do as well.
That's pretty amazing that they could actually lose a diagnosis with just making those changes in dietary intake, which is phenomenal. And yeah, Robert, send me the link for that because I would love to see that myself.
Yes. In fact, I'll yell, super done. Help out Dr. Batar. We've got links to it. It's free for the next 2 days, streaming live. You can buy it, of course, or share it. And these are the things I think schools and churches and synagogues and mosques should be playing to teach people about the, you know, I talk about our body as a temple, a sacred gift, right? And we desecrate it a lot of times unknowingly, admittedly, because we've been programmed. But once we know, if you see visually, like a film like this, we're seeing people finally going, you know, I always knew that I heard organic might be a good idea. And like, now it's clear as can be. So these visual references are important for us to see because a lot of people are like, I'm not certain that would really be it. It's inconvenient. And you find out, wow, it's very significant.
Yeah, it really has an impact overall. And I didn't really place as much of an emphasis on diet early on in my career, but certainly from spending a lot of time overseas and seeing how I just physically felt different when I'm traveling in certain countries. So Spain was a good example. Whenever I was in Spain, and usually I was there for, you know, a week and a half to 3 weeks, my dietary system, my gastrointestinal system would respond differently. Mm. And especially in the last few years, I can tell the difference based upon what we're eating and drinking, based upon which country we're in. It is a massive, massive difference. And even though the food may taste the same or maybe even taste better sometimes over here in the States, you know, your body doesn't respond the same way. Mm. And so there's something very, very important that we're missing. And the secret, I like the way that the title of that movie said Secret Ingredients, because that's the thing. A lot of these things, they're hidden. We don't even know. We don't recognize. You know, you don't see it. You can't measure it per se. So then it's out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
And yet the implications in the body are just phenomenal. Just monosodium glutamate as an example of a poison that's being used indiscriminately all throughout, and we don't even know it. You know, you pick up a bag of potato chips and you look at it, it's got, most of them have monosodium glutamate in there.
On top of who knows what, there's now GMO potatoes, in fact, they exist, so they don't like brown or green up. Now, Dr. Batar, I want to share an example. For instance, you know how organic I am, and you bragged on me. It's like, you're crazy, you know, I thought I was clean, right? But the idea of that I don't ever indulge in things that are like, oh, that's a bit of a junk food, right? I don't eat much, but for instance, there are times when, you know, I like pizza. I grew up on pizza. There are not many organic pizza places out there, so I'll go to a place where there's organic frozen pizzas, but there are some that are made in the United States, and there are some that I founded that are actually imported from Italy, like you described, being in Spain. And there's a significant difference in the wheat grown in Italy that's organic compared to the organic wheat that's hybridized and whatever it is in America. And I can tell my body does worlds better on that Italian variety when I do indulge in something like that. So to your point, certain areas of the world may have less contamination in certain, you know, as far as the genetic lineage even of the foods, for instance, of hybridized wheat products, grains, for instance.
Yeah, we've never thought that organic grain, organic wheat in Italy versus organic wheat in the United States would be a difference, but apparently there's a very big difference. You know, one of the things, Robert, that I was amazed to hear was that they can, based upon the definition of organic in certain places, like in California, for example, they can use human waste as a source of organic fertilizer, and it's considered acceptable, and it's not labeled any different than somebody that's using some other form of organic fertilizer. Now, it's based upon semantics, as we understand. You know, remember the Whole Foods fiasco where people were buying stuff from Whole Foods thinking that it was organic, which it was, but it was also genetically modified, but it wasn't labeled that way. And so there was an outcry about that because people assumed that because it was organic, it was not going to be GMO. But when I was raising our cattle, the A2 cattle here in North Carolina for the milk, as you know, I wrote about that in my book with the importance of the A2 milk. But what I found really, really amazing was when I tried to find organic feed in North Carolina, And I found a place and was talking to them. I said, is your stuff non-GMO? Well, it's organic. And he said, well, is it non-GMO? Well, you know, we use natural stuff. Five times I had to ask them before they finally said, I can't answer that. You're going to have to talk to the owner of the company. The owner of the company gets on the phone with me and told me flat out. He said, nope, it is definitely genetically modified. He said, it's organic. It's this and that. But he goes, it is genetically modified. And he said, you're not going to find anything in the state of North Carolina that's not genetically modified. I had to start getting our feed for our cattle from West Virginia, because that was the first place, closest place that I could get that had non-GMO
options. Exactly. Listen, we've got a bunch of questions that are coming in for you, Dr. Bitar, through the website at robertscottbell.com. But also, some of your folks that are normally watching you on Facebook have joined us on the YouTube channel. Welcome, everybody, at RS Bell Media Channel as well. Juniper is asking, it's her first time live here on this venue, said, Dr. Bitar, any advice on required, again, we're not giving advice, so sorry, Juniper, it won't be advice, but information, on required vaccines for college-bound autistic kids. Meningitis and Tdap are trying, they're trying to mandate it. We are in California. Oh, that's a bad place to be. Looking into homeoprophylaxis for protection. Thank you. Well, Juniper, I'm glad you're looking that way. But Dr. Bitar, you see how they're going after physicians in California now who are providing the exemptions, medical exemptions?
Yeah, so they can't control the public. So what are they doing? They're trying to control the doctors now by railroading and pressuring and manipulating and intimidating them. Scaring them.
So if you think about these kids that may have gotten through high school just fine without them or have been injured clearly by vaccines, and this is the case with this Juniper's children growing up now wanting to go to college, they're saying, no, you can't come in without a Tdap and meningitis. How could they do that to children who are clearly injured?
Yeah, I don't know how they can do it. The key for you to remember, though, is this. It's very close to my own personal life because it just happened last year with my son, who's just finished his sophomore year at UNC. And I remember how angry I got when they were saying that he needed his vaccinations. They wanted his records. They said that, you know, we said that you have to contact the hospital. They said the hospital doesn't have his records. You have to contact them. We contacted them. Of course, they didn't have the records. They'd lost the records conveniently. Which the record said basically that he had been vaccinated when he was born, and that's one of the reasons that he ended up having the injury that he did. And fortunately, we were able to reverse all the damage before he turned 3.5. But you know, there was no way I was going to do any more vaccinations. And I got in a massive brawl with UNC and with the Department of Public Health here in North Carolina. I was threatening this and threatening lawsuits and blah, blah. And then I suddenly realized, wait a second, what am I doing? Why am I giving them this attention? You know, it's preposterous for me to sit here. This is a 17 year, actually now he's 20, but at that time he was just 18. And I was like, why am I sitting here getting enamored and animated and angry and allowing these people to have the power? In fact, Robert, this is a really good question coming up because we're going to be talking about this at the Advanced Medicine Conference.
Yes.
I just shifted my mindset, completely shifted it. And after I told them that it's not going to happen, I talked to Abhi, and I told him, Abhi, you might have to go to school somewhere else. You know, in his normal matter-of-fact tone, he said, why, Dad? And I said, because of the vaccine issue. He said, I'm not going to get any more vaccines. I said, I know. That's why you're going to probably, you may have to start looking, you know, we may have to consider a different school. He's like, all right. And that was it. That was a year and a half ago. We haven't heard anything from them because here's what I thought. What are they going to do? Are they going to arrest somebody and put them in? I guess they could, what they did in California, at UCLA, right? They quarantined certain students, mandatory quarantine. Right. And I guess they could try to do something like that. But, Abhi learned at a very, very young age, if somebody comes against you, comes attacks you, kick them in the PP and yell stranger danger. And until he got his black belt at the age of 10, you know. Mm-hmm. And so now I don't really worry about him too much from that standpoint. Nobody's going to force him to do something. But really, it comes down to for parents that are in this situation, as the individual who just asked us that question. I'm sorry, Robert, what was her name?
I got to scroll back up to it. Hold on. That was coming from... Oh, now I lost. There's too many people. Oh, Juniper. Juniper.
Juniper. Okay. So Juniper. Basically for Juniper, you know, the key thing is that I would remind you is that you are empowered with the making the decision of where your child has to go to school. And if somebody is mandating that he has to or she has to have a vaccine in order to matriculate at that particular institution of higher education, I would simply exercise my choice and change the location, change the venue, change, you know, the school, because it's not right. And don't give them the power of dictating as if they control you. They don't control you. You've got a few thousand choices of school where you can send your child to if they aren't going to accommodate. And that's how I did it. And but it's getting ridiculous. It's getting, you know, from just, it's just getting downright ridiculous. And they're going to be, we're right now talking about students, but what are we going to start doing when they start mandating individuals like they did at Rockland, right? Rockland County, was it?
Yeah. In fact, we opened today talking about the discrimination again, more hatred of Jews just because they don't want to vaccinate. Again, it's a small fraction of a small fraction of the Jewish population, just like any population. You can go into a church, a synagogue, a mosque, and you'll find only a small percentage of those folks, whatever religious institution you go to, are not vaccinated. Most of them are. Let's be honest about where it's at. The consciousness hasn't fully shifted yet in these religious institutions to say, you know what, we don't want you desecrating your temple. We believe that's a fundamental violation of our religious beliefs.
Well, and that's the thing, Robert, that there's so many things like this going on right now, and we have to just make sure that we are aware. And once you're aware of the situation, once you're aware of who the enemy is, and once you're aware of their tactics, these are, again, just intimidation tactics. And we just have to now, once we become aware of it, just make sure that we are doing what we need to do to prevent them from taking over.
Yeah.
Now, exactly. I'm just going to tell you right now that if an individual starts to think that, what am I going to do? Oh, you know, my God, they're forcing me to do this with my child or whatever the case is. You are yourself giving them power. Don't give them the power. Do not give them the power. Don't think that just because they are whatever they are, that they are going to control you. Simply remove yourself from that engagement. It takes two people to dance. It takes two people to fight. It takes two people to argue. Okay. Mm-hmm. You simply remove yourself from the equation. There is no fight. There is no more argument. There's no more competition. There's no more whatever.
Beautifully said. Yeah.
That's the way I would do it, because this is your child you're speaking about now.
Again, that's like the kung fu, the aikido. You know, you understand the concepts of martial arts being like water. Let them flow past you. Don't give them the energy with which they use to attack, batter you, imprison you, steal from you, etc. It starts somewhere. It starts with us participating and empowering them. Again, you have the freedom to do that, but I don't recommend it. And it takes a lot of suffering before, I guess, people are willing to go, you know what, it's uncomfortable to remove myself from the situation, but it's even less comfortable to stay in it. And that's the point at which, how do we know when somebody's ready? Well, only when they're ready.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Robert. That's exactly right.
And a lot of these principles we're going to be sharing with you at the Advanced Medicine Conference this weekend coming up, Memorial Day weekend in Pasadena, Los Angeles, California. Links are up in the show notes at robertscottbell.com. We're going to take a quick breather here, quick break. We've got great questions of the day coming in. There's a lot of comments coming in through those of you watching live on on YouTube now, later on Brighteon. We want to thank Mike Adams and Ty Bollinger and everybody for sending out the alert on the upcoming Advanced Medicine Conference. We want you all to be here. It's a life-changing event with also Dr. Bruce Lipton and others. We'll talk more about that as well. Stick with us. We got a lot more here. Healing to go on the Robert Scott Bell Show after we come back from this brief break.
Have you ever watched a movie with superheroes and villains? If so, you already understand the science of drinking hydrogen-enriched water and how to unlock true health. Allow me to explain. In our bodies, we have a natural struggle between superheroes and villains, with molecular hydrogen being the superhero and oxidative stress the villain. So how does knowing that give you the tools to unlock true health? Your body is naturally designed to fight oxidative stress through specific bacteria in the gut that creates hydrogen on their own. Pretty awesome, right? So why does this matter? Well, in most people, the hydrogen-creating bacteria is gone, and cancer and disease soon follow. So the real question is, why aren't we trying to fix this every day? Well, the answer is simple. It's hard. Even the most healthy of individuals who biohack take months or years to achieve this balance. But how do we get there without taking months or even years? After years of study and development, we discovered and designed the perfect technology that made it all possible. We call this technology Echo H2 Water. Within minutes of drinking hydrogen-rich water from our Echo Hydrogen water machines, you are back in control, balanced and feeling amazingly hydrated and healthy. Having your own Echo Hydrogen water machine is kind of like having your own team of superheroes on call, always available to fight the villains in your body. Pretty cool, right? But don't just take our word for it. Get your Echo H2 water machine today and quickly bring your body into balance with hydrogen.
Thank you all for being here on the Robert Scott Bell Show. We've got, of course, Dr. Raj Batar every Monday, Advanced Medicine. And this coming weekend, we'll be together for the Advanced Medicine Conference. Dr. Batar's having all kinds of issues with Facebook today. So welcome if you're watching us live on YouTube. Even his image is what we call a static image right now. But the screen grab was very kind to Dr. Batar, because if it grabbed me, I'd look like a total SpongeBob cartoon character. Dr. Batar actually looks like a handsome man with a beard. He's masculine. He's raring to go. So we still got your audio, Dr. Batar. So I think we're good to go.
I think I see my screen capture. It looks like I'm looking up to the upper right-hand corner.
Yeah, sort of looking at my hat, which is...
You know, it's funny because... Yeah, and actually the way I have you on my screen right now, you're also frozen. So you're looking up and I'm looking over to the side. So we're both kind of looking in the same direction on either side of the screen.
How goofy do I look in that screen grab? I don't know. So we had a comment, you know, when we were talking about the food in different places. Mm-hmm. Christina says, I'm celiac and basically explode with illness if I eat any wheat in Canada or the U.S., but I just spent a month in Colombia and could eat all of the bread and pasta I wanted to and had zero gut upset. I think, again, a large part of this problem is the fact that they're soaking all the grains, the oats, and desiccating them in glyphosate as they're getting ready to be harvested, because it causes uniformity of the drying so they can all harvest at the same time. And it's punching holes in people's guts, whether you're celiac or not. And they're not doing it in certain other countries. And that's a big difference maker in terms of tolerance for something you think you have no tolerance for. We have no tolerance for glyphosate, folks.
Yeah, it's one of the interesting components with glyphosates in this description that you just had. There are many explosions within the gastrointestinal system. I actually saw, I don't remember where it was, Robert. I don't know whether it's something that you sent me or it was maybe one of the people that Ty had on his venue at Truth About Cancer that had a video, but basically showing these mini explosions, the way it was designed, that many of these chemicals, some of these insecticides especially, that are designed to prevent bugs from eating the crops, the same component that affects these bugs, when we eat the grains, the same thing happens, except it's happening in a microvascular component or a minuscule component, but it's thousands of these reactions taking place. So it would be the same thing as for a bug. And, you know, per bug, it's probably not that big of an impact, even though I'm sure that it is. But now you're talking about, we're much bigger than bugs. We're ingesting so much more than a bug would ingest. So we're getting, the amount that we're getting hit with, it's like millions of microscopic explosions within the gastrointestinal system, causing these, as you said, punch holes or through the gut, creating a leaky gut syndrome, and then many other types of conditions that lead to autoimmune issues and immunity issues, et cetera, et cetera. So God knows what we're doing to the system when we're ingesting these chemicals. And so what we do to the foods that we eat, that's the sixth toxicity in the seven toxicity philosophy, what we do to the foods. So we know about the homogenization, how bad that is, and the pasteurization, and the irradiation, and now, of course, the genetic modification, and God knows what else we're doing to food. So this isn't, when I talk about food toxicity, I'm not talking about what actually is included in the foods. I'm just, not the insecticides and pesticides and all that stuff, but I'm just talking about the components outside of what we add to the foods, things that we do to manipulate the food, like the irradiation, the genetic modification. It's no longer even food on a morphological level. I don't even think you can classify it as food anymore.
No. And here's a great story, and I think you'll like it. Super Don sent it to you, Dr. Batar. He knows the stuff in your wheelhouse that you love to cover. And I know we're going to be doing this with Dr. Bruce Lipton this weekend coming up in Pasadena at the Advanced Medicine Conference. Here's the headline. I'm going to show everybody, those of you watching live. And it says, for people with strong life purpose, making healthier choices may be less effortful, according to a new study. In other words, if you have a strong life purpose, it's easier for you to make better choices about what you're going to do in life. They call it healthier choices. I'm not surprised by this.
So they're saying that if you're able to make healthier choices, if what?
Basically, if you have a strong life purpose, right? You know why you're here. That your ability to make healthier choices is less effortful. I guess I think about effortful. I believe, you know, effort is part of life, but there's something called effortless effort. when you're in that zone, that special place.
That special place.
And then it transforms the way you move through life. There's not as much resistance, I guess, is what I'm hearing here.
Yeah, it's interesting because when you are in a state of where you're in a position of influence, there may be more motivation. If you're a teacher, an instructor, this is one thing that I learned personally, that if you really want to learn something really well, teach it. Because when you teach it, you have to become the best at it, right? You can't teach something unless you really know the material upside down, backwards and forwards. And so when you're talking about life choices, whether it's exercise or dietary intake, if you are in a position where you are having people listen to what you're saying from life choices, you know, for me, for example, being a doctor and being the type of doctor that I am, I have found it often to be beneficial in helping me to motivate, because I'm even when I feel like I'm lazy sometimes, I know that there are other people that are looking at me as a role model, and that helps to influence me to get up off my lazy butt and actually go do what I need to do. Yes. And so I can see that makes sense. It's intuitively obvious to me. Mm-hmm. I think as what you said.
Yeah. So they tested this idea, this concept. They said they recruited sedentary people, funny enough, who needed to exercise more. I'm like, what sedentary people don't need to exercise more? Just all right, to be selected, they go through, they need to be overweight or obese and have to engage in fewer than 200 minutes of activity in the last 7 days prior to the screening. So they completed a survey about their life purpose, indicating the degree to which they agreed or disagreed with statements like, I have a sense of direction and purpose in my life, or I don't have a good sense of what it is I'm trying to accomplish in life. Next, they're shown healthy messages promoting this physical activity, the responses to the message modified by some kind of scanner, and basically they concluded that those that answered that first question in the affirmative, that I have a sense of direction and purpose in my life, had also said that it was much easier to make these changes, to actually do the things that we talk about. And I think, you know, when you see Bruce Lipton and you hang out with him, suddenly you're identifying that primary issue of the purpose in life. Why are you here? And the power you have, the control that you actually have over your health. And you're leaving that interaction, that presence, going, I feel great about my future suddenly, as opposed to feeling victimized.
I think that's a very logical and accurate statement, Robert. I think that is something that the more we see people with a strong life purpose becomes more and more obvious. And I don't think it has to be somebody who's necessarily a teacher or an instructor. It can be anybody that has a strong life purpose, a parent that has a very strong intention and belief that they have to protect their child and take them to the next level. I sort of see that for myself as the jets that would take the shuttle up to a certain altitude, and when it would get to a certain altitude, then the shuttle would take off into outer space and the jet would fall, mm-hmm. fall back into the normal, you know, whatever that demarcation standpoint was. And so as parents, if we see ourselves as being those aircraft that are carrying the shuttle up to a certain elevation, and then when it can't go any further, then the shuttle takes off, that's a strong life purpose. And it doesn't really make any difference how you define that life purpose. It's just knowing that you have a purpose and that you're here for a mission, whatever that mission may be.
Yes.
And
yes.
Everybody's here for some mission.
When you don't have a mission or purpose in life, would that fall under the spiritual toxicity? I mean, where would it closely align in the seven toxicities?
You know, that's a really good question. The first thing is, I believe everybody has a life purpose, life mission. Whether we recognize it and realize it or not, that's a different story. So some people may be walking around thinking, so I think rather than seeing those that don't have a mission in life, it's
they
that
don't
they
know
don't
it.
Recognize their mission in life.
I agree. Put that completely.
I think that you would be right. That would fall into the spiritual toxicity. My definition of spiritual toxicity to the seventh toxicity is actually very, very broad. And it is when an individual feels that their belief system, spiritual belief system, is so important for them to impose it upon somebody else's belief system is where I classify them as being spiritually toxic.
Yeah.
And certainly what you're talking about, that life purpose part, not being aware of it and I don't know whether I'd necessarily so I'll call that a toxicity.
It may be a spiritual deficiency, maybe.
Deficiency, yeah.
Yeah.
I would say that.
I agree, because that, you know, way you describe that is you know, that fundamental violation of spiritual freedom. And not everybody gets that, that, you know, we've been granted the freedom to make choices in our life so that we can learn from it, so we can grow spiritually. And if we impose our beliefs by force or violence, we are violating a fundamental freedom given to us by our Creator.
Yeah, I agree with you, Robert. You sounded like a chipmunk there, because everything, I lost you, and then it all came back in one time. It was really very fast. But yes, you're absolutely right. We are violating that fundamental right that's been given to each one of us. I think that man and women, but when I say man, I mean the species of man, mm-hmm. when we start to become aware, that's where that awareness and that presence helps us to become less spiritually deficient and helps us get more to the point of being aligned with whatever our mission is. And I think that the way you said spiritual deficiency, when you don't know what your life purpose is, being a spiritual deficiency, I like that much better, because I believe that's what it is. It's not a toxicity issue, it's a deficiency issue. And it's just like getting a person, turning on the faucet and allowing that bucket to get filled up so that they're more aware of what they're supposed to
be. Let it overflow. That's the abundance that comes from the Creator. Listen, folks, go to robertscottbell.com right now if you're watching, and you can see Dr. Batar's links. Including what we're talking about right now. I'm going to scroll down through the notes so you can visually see it, and you can go there later if you're listening on mobile devices or in your car through iTunes or Stitcher or whatever the programs are that allow you to do that. I think there are some now that are very geared toward even being in cars to listen. Talk radio through the internet now, which is happening. There's questions of the day coming through. This is the first one from Mike in Louisville, Dr. Batar. It says, "Hi, RSB and Dr. B. My fiance and I are on a diet. We are actually fasting, similar to what Dr. Batar is doing. But we are also trying to drink the appropriate amount of water our body needs. I am a 180-pound guy. I'm short and have been trying to drink approximately 100 ounces of filtered water a day through my Berkey filter. Now to the issue. My mom hears all the stories that too much water is bad for you. And on top of that, I only have one kidney. Is there such a thing as too much water if I only have one kidney? Thanks, as always, for all that you both do for everyone, Mike in Louisville." So, Dr. Batar, what do you think?
Well, first, yes, I am fasting, and I was actually kind of feeling it right now. Mm-hmm. Secondly, the fasting that I'm doing is without water, which is, it's more of a spiritual fast. It's because of Ramadan right now. But water, you can fast without water, and so I think they call that a dry fast, basically. Right. So, of course, I'm doing it from a spiritual purpose. I'm not doing it from a health purpose, but I typically do intermittent fast 16 to 20 hours anyway. That's a normal, I'd say probably 5 days a week I do. So now with the gentleman that asked the question, I don't know what's wrong with my brain, Robert. I'm not remembering.
Mike, you're on a fast and it's a dry fast. You're going to turn into a prune. Hurry up. Drink some water. I'm just kidding.
Right. Well, easy. So basically what Mike's question is,
can you do too much water with one kidney particularly?
Right. So the one kidney aspect, and then two, is there such a thing as too much water? So I was actually asked this question in South Africa when I was there about 16, 17 years ago. And in fact, that's when the concept of the 9 steps to keep the doctor away book actually came about. But I answered that question. Yeah, there is such a thing as drinking too much water. It's called drowning. And so that's my definition of too much water. Now, when somebody has one kidney, you have to remember that hydration is part and parcel of how the system works. And the kidney is a filter that's helping to clean. But what people don't understand, they think that the more water you put into this filter, the more the filter is being taxed, more burden on it. Whereas in fact, that's not the truth. Okay, this comes back to a surgical principle. The solution to pollution is dilution. And so the kidneys are one of the organs that are filtering all the heavy metals, for example, and all these other. But when you do a renal parenchyma biopsy, you will see actually a higher concentration of heavy metals in the kidneys than you would in other parts of the body, because that's where the kidneys are actually concentrating a lot of the metals as they're naturally filtering, and not just metals, but other types of things. So the kidneys are naturally cleaning out the system. Mm-hmm. The more water we put into that system, the more it's going to flush it. It's not like it's going to back it up. Now, of course, if you've got a problem with the kidney where it's an impaired kidney and it's not functioning correctly, then you're going to end up having a problem. But if the kidney is functioning normally, And the best way to maintain that normal function is by giving it a lot of good, clean water, without a doubt, because you're actually not only just hydrating yourself, but you're actually flushing the kidney. You're creating a greater impetus to clean the kidney. Does that make sense, Robert, what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, and also to his question about the amount, right? He's 180 pounds doing 100 ounces. You know, the typical thing you hear about a mathematical equation, if you weigh 180, 90 ounces, half your body weight in water in ounces compared to pounds. Again, that's just a general rule. Some people that are sweating or working out a lot need more. But again, finding that sweet spot for you, make sure that you, when you urinate, typically, you know, it'll be clearer than, unless you take a lot of B vitamins that are water soluble. But the idea is to, you know, not have scanty, dark urine because you're not hydrated enough.
Yeah, so basically that comes down to my formula has always been 50 to, it's basically one half to two thirds your body weight in ounces of water per day.
So Mike is right in that wheelhouse based on that.
Right, so it'd be 90 to 120 ounces for Mike. And so if you're doing that, Mike, I think you're doing good. But yeah, I wouldn't worry about drinking too much water. I don't believe in that.
Think the one versus two kidneys is an issue. Obviously, what you put into your body in terms of food will stress your liver, which will stress your kidney by definition. So take care also not only on the quality of water, which you are, but the quality of food. We've talked about that, and we'll continue to do so. Now we have a question from Nancy coming in. Hi, Robert. It's not my Nancy. It's somebody else. I am hoping you will have Dr. Batar on your program today. Well, Nancy, you're in luck. He's on. Her question is, I have a friend who is facing breast cancer. Her question is, what kinds of tests does Dr. Batar perform during his prescribed treatments? In other words, if they come to you as a patient and they have this scenario and you're putting them on, and I know you don't treat cancer, right? We talk about helping the body to overcome it, and that's what we facilitate. But, you know, I get the spirit of the question. During the prescribed treatments to show that they're actually effective. My friend has done natural medicine and diet for many years. She's very informed and is considering contacting you to receive help. She also lives in Florida. So Nancy and her friend want to know, are there tests that you conduct to show success, or are there other means by which you determine success?
Success in cancer?
Cancer treatment therapy, yes.
Well, I think that the type of things that I look at for success are, you know, when somebody's been told that they've got 6 months left to live, like Ryan, the kid that I talked about at the Truth About Cancer conference, or many of the patients that we've got on video, and, you know, you see them, like Ryan just turned 29, and he was 12 when I treated him. I mean, so when you're talking about a test to establish success, I mean, I think that the most important criteria for success is, where's the patient at a year later, 2 years later, 5 years later, 10 years later, 20 years later? But yes, of course, there's certain tests that I do, but the tests that I do are not tests for the patient. They're tests for me to make sure I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing to get the response, that the desired response. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes patients get confused. They think that we're doing tests to show them stuff. I'm not here to prove something to the patient. I'm here to get the job done, which is to get the patient healthy so that the person's going to be here for the next 5 years, 15 years, 50 years. That's what my goal is.
Right.
So those tests are being done in order to make sure that we are on the right path. So there are certain tests that I do. Yes, I've been amazed at the number of tests that people come in with, Robert. I've had people come in with literally phone book thick testing that's been done. And when I ask them, what treatments did you have done? The patient looks at me with a blank stare and they said nothing. I just had test after test after test done. So if you're gonna do tests and there's no therapy that's being considered, then what's the point of the test? This is becoming an academic issue now. Mm-hmm. And in integrative medicine, I've seen so much of that. Mm-hmm. In the military, we had this, military doctors do a lot less testing than civilian doctors. There was a study that was actually published in one of the emergency medicine journals about that. And my philosophy, basically being a military, having been trained in the military, I guess maybe that's the reason I do this. My testing is limited to what will determine me going to the right or going to the left. If the treatment that I'm going to do is not right or left, meaning if I do a test and the test could give me seven different results, but it's not going to change how I'm going to treat them, I'm not going to do the test. I just don't think it's a necessary test to do. People say, well, I don't know whether I'm this or that. I'm like, it doesn't matter to me whether you're this or that, because it's not going to change my course of treatment. I'm still going to treat you the same way.
Dr. Batar. Here's something that I think about, and we've covered this before, but maybe she's new or her friend is new considering this, right? How often have we heard of oncological therapies like chemo or radiation, where the patient dies, but the doctors, you know, say, hey, it was really largely a success. Remember when the tumor, we started, look at it now. You know, it's tiny, like, but the patient is dead. And so maybe it's a matter of, if it's a breast cancer, how do we know that, you know, the breast tumor is shrinking, or something along those lines? Now, oftentimes the tests used to analyze it are ionizing radiation that are causing cancer cells to manifest. So sometimes these tests are counterproductive, would they not be?
Absolutely, they are. They're very much. I like the way you like pose that as a question, as if you don't know, which you know very well, better than, you know, 99% of the people out there. Yeah, of course, we know that those tests are very, very damaging, and ionizing radiation. So basically, when somebody has a mammogram, if you want to use that example, you've got trauma that's being, that the breast is being exposed.
Pancaked. They're pancaking it physically first. That's a trauma.
And right. Then, so that trauma is causing an inflammatory cascade to begin. And then you're adding insult to injury, because you're actually now having some type of invasive process when they usually tag it, or they try to do a three-dimensional lock on it so they can get an image. So there's usually some type of a needle or some type of location type thing, where they'll put a titanium clip or something to mark it, where the lesion is.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you've got, of course, the radiation aspect itself. So if, thank you for helping to realign me so that I can understand better what the question is. So there, I'm not looking at those type of tests. I don't really care what is happening to that lesion, because what we see as a tumor and, oh my God, it's getting bigger, is actually, in my opinion, the body protecting itself from whatever's happening to keep that cancer from spreading. And so it's a natural mechanism of protection, if you will. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the philosophical thing. Different people have different philosophies on this. So I look at the most important aspect, and that is how the immune system is working. If your immune system is functional, then I know that we are making headway. Because in cancer, your immune system, by definition, does not work. Okay, your B lymphocytes are kaput. Your CD3, CD4 counts are non-functional. Your natural killer cells are taking a nosedive. I'm looking at the lymphocyte subpopulation and seeing what's happening with that. And when I can see those numbers start to turn, then I know I'm making headway. And as those numbers are getting higher, that's what I use to determine whether I've had a good response or not. So I'll give you an example of a mutual friend, Robert. You know this person very well, Rosie, who came to me 17 years ago, I guess now.
Yeah.
You remember Rosie, right?
Of course.
And Rosie had 3B, she had a stage 3B breast cancer. And she had a doctor that basically, she started coming to us and the lesions were disappearing. And then she went back for a follow-up. They basically, the technician was so excited, went to the radiologist. Radiologist comes and tells the patient, not only do you have more tumors, they're getting bigger in size. And the technician couldn't even look at Rosie straight, because the technician knew 10 times better than the radiologist, because she does it all the time. She knew that the radiologist was lying to her. And basically, Rosie was told, if you go to see that doctor up in North Carolina, you're going to die. She got then a letter, certified letter from her surgeon, that said that she was going to die in 6 months if she continued to come up to North Carolina. And of course, she continued to come up to North Carolina, and now she's 17 or 18 years out. Now, the reason I'm telling you her story is that the lesion in her breast is still there. It's contracted. It's formed scar tissue. It's caused a defigurement of her breast, and she wants to have it removed, but no surgeon will touch her unless she does chemo. Even though after 17 and a half years, there's no activity in there, ultrasound shows nothing going on, kinesiologically, energetic testing, there's nothing going on there. It's a scar tissue. But nobody will touch her because they want to do chemo before they go in and do the surgery. This is how ridiculous our system has come down to. But that was 17 and a half years ago, and there's no, and she's, you know, she's in great health. I haven't talked to Rosie in a couple of years, but last time I talked to her, she was doing fantastic.
And I'm going to add in the low-tech homeopathic element. I'm not even talking remedies. I'm just talking about, you know, not ionizing radiation scans, things like that, that you can't overemphasize, because it's always underemphasized, the importance of how you feel. I mean, literally, not lying to yourself, but how do you feel? How are your energy levels? How are your bowel patterns of elimination? There's so many factors. Of course, you can measure inflammation markers if you want to do tests like that in a general sense. But how do you feel? How's your energy? How's that the vital force we talk about, the vital force in homeopathy, a vitalistic view of the body? And that's lost for much of modern medicine. Even though they're great, they could be great mechanically, although there can be danger in looking at the body as just a mechanical entity or instrument. But the idea is, how do you feel, and how is that impact on how you're progressing as opposed to where you started. Pay attention to those things. They mean things.
I completely agree with you, Robert. And those things are very important. A lot of times we forget how important those things are. They're very important. And, you know, we start to look at the importance of things such as tests and how is that when you remember tests function to guide, help the doctor to understand what they need to do to help you.
Yes.
But nobody ever got better from a diagnostic test. Just remember that.
Yes. Hey, stand by, Dr. Bitar. We're out of time for the live radio version that's going to go out on UK Health Radio and elsewhere. We're going to take a quick break here. Dr. Bitar is going to spend a few more minutes with us in what we call extra innings during the summer months on the Robert Scott Bell Show. So y'all check it out at robertscottbell.com. Welcome, everybody. If you're just tuning in, you've got lots to catch up on, but it's available, of course, through many, many outlets, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, UK Health Radio, and, of course, Brighteon, in addition to YouTube, robertscottbell.com, also advancedmedicine.com, drbitar.com. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes here. You're listening to the Robert Scott Bell Show, Advanced Medicine. Dr. Rasha Bitar, the power to heal is yours.